Well, it seems appropriate to play Centerfold if we're going to talk about the late Hugh Hefner, who, as you know, we found out a couple of days ago, died this week at the age of 91. If there's a man in American history who ever lived out the male fantasy more than Hugh Hefner, I do not know who it is. My next guest knows a little bit about Hugh Hefner because she worked with him on a couple of books, including her most recent one, which is called Playboy Laughs, the Comedy, Comedians, and Cartoons of Playboy. A couple of years before that, she wrote another book called Playboy Swings, How Hugh Hefner and Playboy Changed the Face of Music. Patty Farmer, welcome to the show.
Hi, Paul. It's my pleasure.
Nice to have you on here. You did work with Hefner on those two books, right?
Oh, definitely. He was a big contributor to both. You know, he told me what was going on and, you know, all the little nuances, in addition to opening up his personal archives to me.
Well, that's nice. What do you see as Hugh Hefner's legacy?
Oh, my gosh. Where do I even begin? You know, people, they initially, when they hear Playboy, they immediately think of bunnies and centerfolds. But, you know, Paul, it was so much more. It was, if I had to pick one thing, I'd say civil rights or really human rights. You know, he was credited with helping to break the color barrier on stage. He, believe it or not, championed women's rights and gay rights and just human rights in general.
Let's talk about his contribution to the civil rights movement for a moment here, because I actually had the opportunity to talk to Hefner back in 1999 when he came out with a book kind of about his life and the history of Playboy. And I dove into this with him, and he was actually a little bit reticent to talk about it because a lot of the stuff he did anonymously, didn't he?
Definitely. Most of what he did, you know, it was... I always think he is like the true definition of a colorblind person, because he just did what he thought was right. You know, if there was a singer or performer that was fabulous, he didn't care if they were black, white, or yellow. You know, just how good the song was or how great they could tell a joke or swing an instrument. And he was always shocked when there was blowback. You know, the time he put Nat King Cole on Playboy's penthouse and the networks and sponsors threatened to cancel the show and cancel advertising, he was once again shocked by it, but not deterred. You know, it did not change his mind at all.
Even though they objected, he kept putting on African-American guests on those on both Playboy's penthouse and later Playboy After Dark, right?
He definitely did, and this just wasn't a matter of opinion. This was still segregated America. We're talking 1959, 1960, well before 1964 Civil Rights Act. So, I mean, it was illegal in a lot of the country, and Hefner really didn't care about that. He integrated his shows. He integrated the membership. He integrated the Playboy Jazz Festival.
I watched the series about him that was on Netflix Prime recently, and it's still on there for people who want to watch and learn more about the Playboy history and the Hugh Hefner history. And I'm guessing now that he's gone, a lot more people will go and check that out. But during the portion where they were talking about exactly this point, he is said to have told his staff, look, they may not want to run the show now because they're racist, but if we get good ratings, they'll put us back on the air. And that actually did happen, didn't it?
Yeah, it definitely did. I think you're talking about American Playboy, and it's a really very insightful show. And you're absolutely right. You know, it's you know what the public wants, and I think they came to understand his way of thinking. You know, Nat King Cole was a fabulous performer, and they just wanted to hear the songs. They didn't want to deal in with the politics.
The Playboy
Club. Kind of like what's going on today.
Yeah, there's definitely a parallel. The Playboy Club opened in Chicago and then expanded to other cities. St. Louis was the fourth city to have a Playboy Club back in 1962. What was the impact of all of those Playboy clubs or those Playboy clubs around the country on comedy, which you write about in Playboy Laughs?
Well, number one, it gave the performers a circuit. You know, none of these performers were, you know, born as a headliner. Joan Rivers, when I spoke to her for the book, she said she wasn't hatched as a headliner out of an egg. She began as a trio, part of a trio, at the Playboy Club. So it gave the performers a stage to perfect their act, to learn their timing, to learn what it was like to work in front of an audience. And in Joan Rivers' case, you know, she came back at each incarnation of her career. She was a trio, starting out as Jake, Jim, and Joan, and then she came back as a stand-up comedian and came back as a headliner, just because Playboy was, you know, a great place to work. It was 42 clubs at the helm, and it gave people a circuit. You know, they could really work and make money and get better.
Who were some of the other iconic comics who got their big break at the Playboy clubs?
Oh, my God, Paul. You know, it would be so much easier for me to tell you who didn't. everybody was there. You know, Flip Wilson was discovered there. You know, Johnny Carson discovered him. You know, everybody was there. Everybody from the little knowns to the well knowns. You know, Shecky Green and Jackie Gale and Rodney Dangerfield. You had all those. And then you had the generation of the Billy Crystals and Steve Martins and Jay Leno. So, I mean, truly, it was around for three decades. So you had a lot of generations of great comics came up through the Playboy clubs. And you had the emergence of the female comics, too. He gave a stage to Phyllis Diller, you know, who was not only female, but she was a middle-aged female. So, you know, he did a lot for a lot of things, but for comedy in particular.
And what about on the music side, since you've written not just Playboy Laughs, but also Playboy Swings? What was the Playboy impact on music, both through the clubs and the magazine?
Well, you know, Hefner loved jazz, so that was his main focus. But second, it was an American songbook. So all the great singers, you know, take Al Jarreau. Again, he started out at the Playboy clubs. And not only that, he was part of a duo. He was Al and Julio. And just gave these folks a place to work and get better, you know, and move up. And in Al's case, he became the Grammy Award winner, a performer that he became. But you had people like Tony Bennett and, you know, Nicole Simone and, you know, just all these great performers. And it was, you know, he helped transform jazz, I think, from a dance music to a music really that you sat down and paid and listened to. You know, case in point with the jazz festivals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Playboy jazz festivals, people paid money and sat and listened to it. And that was novel in 1959.
Let's talk a little bit about the magazine. You know, there's that old joke about, oh, yeah, I read Playboy, but only for the articles.
Mm-hmm.
That actually had some truth. Maybe people weren't reading it only for the articles, but, you know, they were picking it up for the naked women inside. But they were getting some pretty good text content as well, weren't they?
They absolutely were. And that was, you know, Hef's whole idea. He wanted to have something that appealed to everybody. He had great literature, you know, the great literary writers, you know, people like Ian Fleming and Bruce Friedman and just on and on. But he had great editors. You know, Spektorsky edited it. And that was really part of Hef's brilliance. You know, he hired the very best people to run things, the very best musicians and comics and literary editors and literary content. That was his really brilliant success.
And the Playboy interview was pretty influential as well. I mean, I remember Alex Haley talking with Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, exposing them to an audience of white guys who never would have read them if they hadn't looked for the women inside.
Absolutely. And not only that, Alex Haley interviewed the grandmaster of the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, yeah.
When he was set up for the interview, I forget his name, but he said he didn't want any Jew writer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you know, exactly the verbiage.
Yep.
And Hef said, don't worry, you won't have a Jewish writer. He sent Alex Haley.
I love that. Now, I can't let you go, Patty, without asking you the big question, which is, you know, Hefner always contended that he was not exploiting women. But his detractors said, yes, you are. You've been using women as objects through your entire career. What do you think? You're a woman.
You know, just through research, you know, even putting personal aside, I say no. I say he helped the movement back as early as 1960, 61, 62. He championed the right to choice for women in the magazine. He championed the right to get the pill in the magazine. And these were all, you know, very controversial subjects, you know. So he championed women's rights. And all the women, and there were scores of them that I spoke to in writing both my books, and all of them were happy to have the job to be bunnies, to be centerfolds even, and make, you know, make a nice salary. I mean, the girls that worked at the clubs, the bunnies, they were young mothers and college girls, and he actually helped put them through college. I mean, not only with the salary, but he had college assistance through the company.
Yeah, but was it at all creepy to be around him when he was in his 80s and here are these women who are in their 20s who are his girlfriends?
You know, I'm not going there.
Okay.
They didn't think so. They didn't think so. And his wife, you know, Crystal, who is 60 years younger than him.
Wow.
You know, just thought he was pretty dishy, you know, up until 3 days ago.
Yeah. The books are called Playboy Laughs, The Comedy, Comedians, and Cartoons of Playboy. That's the new one, came out just about 6 weeks ago, right, Patty?
Yeah.
And the other one from 2 years ago is called Playboy Swings, How Hugh Hefner and Playboy Changed the Face of Music. Those will both help you understand the legacy of the man who died at age 91 just a couple of days ago. Patty Farmer, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, Paul, I always love visiting with you and your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You know, when I was doing a little bit of research before I knew I was going to have Patty on here, I looked back at some of the other stuff, and Dick Gregory, who, of course, is on the St. Louis Walk of Fame, owes a good part of his career to getting stage time in the Playboy Club here and out on the Playboy Club circuit. And he has said that Hugh Hefner was one of the people who gave him a big boost. Hefner also published Lenny Bruce's autobiography. I did not know this. He bankrolled the first Monty Python movie. That was Hugh Hefner who did that. He also saved the Hollywood sign twice. These are all parts of the Hefner story you may not know. And then, of course, there's the other thing, and I have to read you this bit from the New York Times obituary of Hugh Hefner. It says, one of the girls next door, that was the reality TV show they had on with some of the women who were dating, quote, dating Hef, but lived next door. Another of the girls next door, Holly Madison, offered a much more depressing version of life in the Playboy Mansion in her 2015 tell-all book. In the years when Mr. Hefner was calling her his number one girlfriend, she wrote in the book, Down the Rabbit Hole, that she endured a dysfunctional household of petty rules, allowances, quarrels, and backstabbing, all directed by an emotionally manipulative old man. That does not sound to me like a woman who appreciated and felt he was supporting her through all of those years. When you say emotionally manipulative old man. But that's part of the story of Hugh Hefner, a guy who, again, a lot of men in America looked up to as the guy who gets the girls and the guy who has the lifestyle. Now, I'll be honest with you. I could never relate to most of what he had in the Playboy philosophy, the Playboy lifestyle, the fastest cars. I don't care if the car goes fast. I just care if the car gets me to work. You know, oh, the coolest martinis. Oh, okay. I don't drink. It doesn't apply to me. All the rest of that stuff. The most stylish tie. I don't wear ties. I can't relate to any of that. But, of course, there were the other things in there, not just the naked women, but the rest of it, that made Playboy so iconic for all those years. But as Tim pointed out earlier in the show, that ended, what did we decide, Tim, about 20 years ago? Something like that?
Yeah, somewhere around close to 20 years ago when the computers and all that stuff, internet.
When the internet came along, and Playboy made that huge error of trying to be safe for work by taking the nudes off there a couple of years ago.
In the last couple of days, all the obits have talked about the great articles and everything he did for society. Nobody's really talking about the naked women. Yeah. We need to remember, that's actually why the magazine was so huge.
That's exactly why at one point they were selling 7 million copies of the magazine.
Nothing to do with anything else. It was naked women.
There were other magazines that were printing pretty good articles that were not getting 7 million subscriptions and copies sold every month. He definitely had an eye for what would sell magazines. And the question of whether he exploited women or not is one you'll have to answer for yourself.
And what was the name of the they always had the drawing in there every issue.
The party girl. I don't remember.
Yeah, but there was a name to it.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember.
It was on the same page as the party jokes, which were never funny, by the way.
Yeah.
Nobody ever says, "Oh yeah, pick up Playboy for the jokes." No. No, you didn't. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
All right, that's all the time I have for this week. Have a great weekend. I will see you Monday afternoon from 3 to 6 right back here on the Big 550 KTRS and anytime on harrisonline.com.